So, step five. No big deal. You got that? Okay, so I finish step five. I go through six and seven with my sponsor. We burn eight, which he just looked at my list and said, yeah, kid. And I go out to make amends. And 3 days later, when I'm 28 days sober, the first guy asked me to sponsor him. I call my sponsor. He was standing next to a wall. I found him. I said, somebody has asked me to sponsor him. What do I say? He said, Jay, you say yes. Really? He said, if they are sick enough to ask you for help, you can't hurt them. Would somebody repeat that in Swedish for me? Please. Right. I mean, it's alcohol. Now, just think of this. I mean, Sam Shoemaker gave us this line. And he was talking about religion. But he said, you have to give it away in order to get it. You have to give it away in order to get it. Because you have no idea. This is not about me. The great thing about the third step prayer is it doesn't say, you know, it only says, save my miserable ass so that I can be of service to others. It doesn't say so I can get the beautiful girl, drive the big iron, have the bitchin' career. That's not what the prayer says. Although in some groups it looks like that. But I judge no group. I just divinely evaluate. So anyway, I say yes to this guy. And it starts. Now, about amends, the first amends story I like to tell is my grandmother, Alice. My grandmother, Alice, taught me how to tend bar. She had a restaurant. And I nicked money from the till, so I just owed her a little bit of money. And so I came to her. I was about 3 months sober, and I came to her and I said, grandmother, this is not the grandmother Marie that I was living with, and this is my other grandmother. And I came to her and I said, I've got some money that I've stolen from you, and I'm going to pay it back to you. And Alcoholics Anonymous and God has helped me to stay sober. And she said, what? And AA and God are helping me to stay sober. And she picked the money up and she stuck it in her purse. And she headed for the door. Where are you going? And she turned around and she looked at me and she said, Jay, I don't know, it was about 4 or 5 years ago, you told me that you didn't believe in God. And I went down to church and I put your name on a list, and me and the girls have been praying for you. And I need to go down there and tell them that my grandson has been restored. Spiritual terrorism. It's highly effective. Now, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was developed in a time and in a place where most people went to church. It's a very odd place. People showed up on Sunday, looked at whoever was there, heard stuff, tried to apply it, then went out and tried to do that. And one of the things that's very, very interesting is that I was raised in a home where you were taken to church. Now, when I talk about God, it's got nothing to do with that experience. Okay? Although I did learn some really good stuff there. Because truth is truth. Doesn't matter where it comes from. That's why AA works. Because you get weirdos like me, but if I'm telling truth, it doesn't matter. It's the message. It's not the messenger. I don't know if that... The guy who I met at the Howard Johnson's, that man, I found out later, had 10 years sober. And at another stretch, he had 15 years sober. And he was not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous when he met me, when he told me his story. In fact, he was never an AA member for the rest of his life, but yet he saved my life. In the old days, that would be who my sponsor was, the man who brought me in. He told the truth, and that message saved my life, and it's being told in Sweden. But he wasn't an AA member. So it's the message. It's not the messenger. Anyway, so my grandmother, she goes off and does what she does. But so one of the big changes that has happened over time in my time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and please don't hold it against me. I mean, when I was new, I did in my first couple years, I didn't even want to be in a room with somebody that had 10 years sober. I just flee. But is seeing people that have no religious training at all. And so you say to them, well, pray, or you say to them this and that, and you know, they just think, well, you're some strange, what televangelist do you want me to look at, you know, what and but what I was taught is that prayer is an honest thought. It comes from inside of me, and it doesn't matter the syllables particularly. It's the intent. And so over the course of this weekend, instead of talking about prayer, I'm going to talk about stupid God tricks. In the United States, there was a comedian, David Letterman, who had a television show. And he would bring on strange people that would bring their pet on, and they would do some trick. And it was called stupid pet tricks. And so I'm going to teach you what I call stupid God tricks. You don't have to agree with them, but just try them and see what happens. Or inflict them on someone new you're working. They're new. They don't know. Try it on them. See what happens. Everybody in this room knows somebody that's got a real problem. Like, you may just be in here getting the heat off, trying to make, anyway. But you know somebody that's really got a problem. So here's an experiment, and we're going to talk a lot this weekend about experiments. Now, an experiment, the main thing about it, an experiment, is that you have to have an open mind. And that you take a recipe and you apply it, and then see, and then report what the results are. In early AA and in the Oxford group, and I'm a historian of the spiritual antecedents of the movement. What they talked about was making an experiment. Says, we don't care what you think, just try some stuff, see what happens. So, you know somebody that's in a jam. So this is the same thing that my grandmother did, but it's for folks that are not of that background or training. Stupid God trick number one. When you walk into a room and you see an empty chair, walk up and tap that chair and say that person's name. Get two or three of your friends to help. Do that and see what happens. My experience is that they'll show up. May not be soon, but just tap the chair. That's a prayer. Here's the seat for them. And this is, I've done this with lots and lots of people that had really bad problems over the years. And I'll get the calls. Or people that will be, they'll Skype me from, you know, the Netherlands and say, oh my God, they came in. So, again, this is just a real simple thing. You don't have to believe in anything. You don't need any intercession whatsoever. One of the great things about Frank Buchman, the guy that started the Oxford Group, is that he destroyed the hierarchy. Up until that time, if you had a problem, you had to go to an authority figure in order to get the message, to get help. And he figured out that it was having one person having experience talking to another was more important, that that's where the spirit could get transferred. And so just tap the chair. Try it. See what happens. So I launch out into this life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and over the course of this weekend, I'll be telling you different stories about different things and the like, and my spiritual evolution, my wife and I mean, like, one of the things that I do every year is I literally sit down and I say, if I could do anything in the world, what would I do? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the fourth dimension. This is where we learn to dream deeply and love fearlessly. Because in loving, I can't be hurt. And I might think I get hurt. My wife and I wrote a book on sober relationships, and I'll be talking about some of that this weekend. I've started meditation websites. I've been all kinds of different places around the planet that had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, being of loving service in one fashion or another. Just fun stuff. I mean, it's amazing where you end up. So these stories are just mine, and I'm just, the only reason that I'm telling them to you is to show how the spirit moves. Okay? So I know that this doesn't happen in Stockholm, but in the United States, there are people who say, don't get in a relationship your first year. Well, ask them, is that your experience? So I'm Tendon Bar. I'm about 3 months sober. There's this woman there that obviously wants what I have and is willing to go to some lengths in order to get it. I don't pay any attention because I'm not spiritual enough to about the wedding ring on her finger. We start running around together, and she moves her husband out, and it just not the most spiritual of things. So she gets sober. And I take her to the meetings and show her where to sit in the meetings and introduce her to all the right old-timers and all that great stuff. And I'm not taking advantage of a new woman. I brought her in. And after about 3 months, she leaves me for another woman. And shows her where all the right meetings are and where to sit and who all the old timers are. And I learn about driving through the parking lot to see whether or not I can go to the meeting. I know that never happens here. Is she there? I won't be there. So I'm devastated. There's nothing quite as traumatic as the first sober heartbreak. So I'm sitting outside the Alano Club smoking at her. And there's Irish Dan. Now, how do you get sober without Irish Dan, right? And he smoked these little stubby cigars. He's looking at me. And I tell him my tale of woe. And he goes, "Well, what's your prayer life like, kid?" "Old man, didn't you just hear what I said?" He said, "Well, what's your prayer life like?" "Well, I've told the prayer should be honest. So when I get up in the morning, I go, 'Help!'" "And I go to the meeting and I say the silly prayers. And then if I get home at night and I haven't had anything to drink, and I go, 'Thanks.'" And he goes, "Right on, kid." He said, "That's great." He said, "But you're in trouble, right?" "Yeah." He said, "So we're gonna ramp up your prayer life." "Really? How do I do that?" He said, "We're going to give you an entirely different relationship. We're not going to be asking for something." He said, "You got a job, kid, right?" "Yeah, I got a job." Now, in AA back in those days, it was before newcomers had a union. And so they just didn't pay any attention to you at all. They could be really cruel to you back in the 70s and early 80s. I mean, they'd stick you up against the wall, thump their finger on your chest. They could lay their hands on you. It was incredible. Then newcomers created a union. It was called Cocaine Anonymous. And you know, they just had someplace else to go where they wouldn't be terrorized by these old bastards. Somebody who understood. And anyway, so he says, in AA in those days, if you even talked about your feelings, the first time thing the old timers would say to you is, "Do you got a job, kid?" Because if you were thinking about yourself enough to be able to articulate your feelings, they said, "You've obviously got too much time on your hands. Get a job." So, yeah, I got a job. And he said, "You're alcoholic, so you drive the same way no matter what." "Yes." "And you come home the same way no matter what." "Yes." He said, "What I want you to do is to pick out a God spot." "What's that?" Said, "I want you to figure someplace out where on your way you're actually going to get out of your own head enough to say hi to whatever is." "Huh?" He said, "Just try it." Well, I'm desperate. So I tried it. And what happened is that what he's gotten me to do now is I'm praying 2 more times a day. Unbelievable. And he says, and what happened is about the third day when I said hi, I also thought about somebody else that had a problem. I got out of myself. This is called conscious contact. I had no idea. And what I was doing was I was reaching out to whatever is. And it changed my life. Because later on, I mentioned to you that I'm tendon bar. Things would get a little rocky. I'd get a God spot at work. Now, nobody knows that when I put my hand on the Galliano bottle, what I'm really doing is I'm reaching out to whatever is, saying, dude, I just need to chill out. And it had happened. Or you get a place at the house, because if you got a roommate or a lover or a cat, sometimes it gets a little dicey. And nobody knows when I come over and I touch this. Nobody knows when I come over and I put my hand on this piece of furniture that what I'm doing is I'm getting into conscious contact. Now, one of the things that's really fun is to terrorize new people. It's just great. It's just great. It's like I haven't had a television set in 25 years. I don't need to. I'm with you. That's entertainment. Anyway, one of the fun things to do is to share with new people about, you know, the spiritual path, but I sometimes just give them a shot for the heck of it. And I tell them that I have a deep, profound relationship with Jesus. They start moving away. And Jesus has given me a message for you. Now, Jesus, as I understand Jesus, like if he was hanging out now, he would not be in an AA meeting. He'd be with people that are selling guns for crack. He'd be having fun with those folks. But anyway, that's another thing entirely. But but anyway, so this is the message I tell to the new guys. I say, look, Jesus has told me that his favorite thing to do is to smoke cigarettes with a new guy. And so here's another stupid God trick. Forget the Jesus stuff. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone down there. But I ask guys that, because newcomers tend to smoke. I tell them to put HP on their cigarette pack. And that every time they go out, they invite whatever is to go outside and have a cigarette with them. If they smoke a pack a day, they're praying more than the holiest person in the room. But it's conscious contact. And this was another thing that I got taught, is that if I can break my mind out of the rhythm of my thinking, that something else can happen. And so I've got to trick myself. I've got to learn new behaviors. And one of them was, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I smoked 3.5 packs of cigarettes a day. If I was awake, because you could smoke everywhere in those days. AA men's meetings were like nicotine saunas, you know. Horrible. But you know, I learned that when I went out, we didn't have to go outside to smoke. It was a civilized time. And you could drink and drive and nobody thought anything of it. It was incredible. That whole thing. And so like I learned that what I needed to do was I needed to train myself into other ways of getting out, of having a conscious contact. So, you know, come up with things that the new people that you're working with, you see these repetitive behaviors and just introduce some way of moving them into another way. So that was the great thing that relationship taught me, was that that thing of having a God spot when I went to have a cigarette to reach out for conscious contact. I was brought into an Alcoholics Anonymous that suggested that what you do is that there was a place called the Bodhi Tree. It was a bookstore, and they would bring us down there, and they would show us the different sections. Say, oh, this is metaphysics, this is Christianity, this is Hinduism, this is that. Get a couple books, find some stuff. And always have another spiritual book going along with the big book in the 12 and 12. So that what you're doing is you're expanding your awareness. And you're learning some stuff. And over 35 years, you pick some stuff up. You know, you keep looking at that stuff. So, that early sobriety was so exciting because I went on a lot of 12-step calls, and I got to meet a lot of different people, do a lot of different things. And how many folks here have actually been out on a 12-step call where the exchange has gotten you in? One, two, three. Yeah, fabulous, fabulous. Well, oh, okay. Thank you so much. Please stop me. How many people had been on a 12-step call? Yeah. So it's and like it was wild because my sponsor taught me some very interesting things. Like we went into this hotel room, and this guy, the first call that I went on, And this guy was there, and he told us about how he'd had 15 years sober, and he was from Denver, and that he'd started drinking again here in Los Angeles, and he couldn't get out of the hotel room. Well, it was obvious the way the thing looked. And my sponsor said, come on, we're going to a meeting. The guy said, well, no, I can't. I want you to help me get out of the hotel room. You know, I want you to help me get the bill taken care of, get me home. My sponsor said, sorry. And we got up and we left. And I went, suffering alcoholic. He said, Jay, if they make the call, get them to the meeting. Why? Because everybody else then gets to participate. If it's just you, and so this idea that I can't hurt them and I can't save them, but I am responsible if somebody makes a claim on me to get them to the meeting. That's a wonderful thing. So I talked a little bit about meditation. Now I bring you greetings from the 11-step group in Manhattan Beach, California. We've been going since 1948. Just a little bit of experience. And what we've learned is that 3 minutes is more than enough to change your life. Now I know this doesn't happen in Sweden. But in many of the places that I've gone, there are actually people that say, well, I don't meditate. I've got ADHD. Really? Do you think Bill and Bob didn't? I mean, these dudes were toasted. Well, my mind's too busy. Our Buddhist friends that have been doing this for 4,000 years, they call the beginner's mind the drunken monkey mind. And that's because we all have got it. Like if your mind's screaming at you when you meditate, it's working. Because otherwise, we never realize that our mind is screaming like that at us all of the time. Now, my wife, Adele, asked me to bring you my very best. And so this is the very best that we have to offer, and is our experience together in meditating. And it's something that we, you know, I mean, there are really people that think that they don't have to meditate. Well, I pray. Well, I'm just not good at it. What step are we good at? I mean, there's that whole not drinking thing, right? I mean, which part can you edit out? And so we don't agree with it. We actually do it. So how do you
do that?
Well, our experience is that 3 minutes of silence will change everything. Number one, it's the postmodern era. So you can be 3 minutes late to anything. You can't figure out a way that you don't have 3 minutes that you can get. And 3 minutes is perfect. Now, I've been involved in all kinds of fabulous meditative practices over the years. I always suggest to people, pray and meditate the way you drank and used. Just try shit and see where you end up. And, you know, you learn, well, I don't do that and that. You know, it's just too weird. But anyway, but the fun thing about it is that it's inclusive. So we're going to do a bunch of meditating. Now, I didn't inflict it on you guys when we started out, but we're going to start and finish every session now with quiet time, because it's vital. And like sex, meditation is a lot more fun if there's somebody else involved. And in a group, it gets really interesting. Child of the 60s, what are you going to do with them? Send them to Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, We're gonna sit for 3 minutes together. Okay? Now, if you're just thinking with your eyes closed, it's perfect. Okay? But the idea is that we create a space, we learn to create a space where we are not driven by our mind. So we're gonna find out where that is. We're going to do it as a group, okay? So I'm going to sit here. I brought a prop, and I'll ring it so you don't have to worry about the time.
Why do you ring it 3 times?
I don't have a clue, but somebody said when you do that, you call in the Buddha. I need reinforcements. So anyway, so what I'd like you to do is just first let's get comfortable. Most people don't know that their diaphragm is actually up here in their chest. So let's feel it. Just now, one of the exercises that I've learned that's really helpful to get get myself kind of centered, is take your chin and drop it to your chest. And then as you bring it up, breathe in and then drop it to your chest again. And let's do that 3 times. And then take your left ear and drop it to your left shoulder. And do that 3 times. And then bring your head and drop it back. Bring it up. And now take your head and drop it to your right shoulder. And do that three times. And then take your chin and turn to the left. And then come back to center. And do that three times. And then to the right. And then there's only two more we're going to do. Drop your chin and then roll your head to the left and around in a circle. And do that three times. And then come back to center. And then go to the right three times. Now, see if it doesn't feel just a little bit clearer now than it did when we started. And when you go home, you can say, "This lame from Sedona, Arizona, tricked me into doing yoga." So we're going to sit together for 3 minutes. And if your mind's racing, it's working. One of the other things that might be helpful if you don't have a meditative practice. Here's a cowboy and Indian story from the American. What they would do when they would go to sleep is that they would come present and they would listen to the sound that was closest to them, and then they would shift their awareness further and further and further out till they found the sound that was the furthest away. And then that way, in the middle of the night, if the sound out there changed, they'd know and they'd wake up. So anyway, if you need a direction to go, that's one way to do it. So Thank you. So the spiritual life is not a theory. We got to live it. And it's in the doing that we find out. It's not the figuring it out. And there's some really fun stuff that I'll inflict on you over the course of the weekend. But everything that I'm talking about is practical. So
how do I get a meditative life going?
Well, in our book, it talks about if circumstances warrant, we invite our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. Now, in my country, the word warrant means that the judge wants to see you. Fairly serious term, okay? And that this thing is vital in my experience. And so how do you develop a spiritual life? Well, you do this for 2 or 3 days, and then the next sponsee that you get, when they come over to your house to read the book, you say, well, we're going to meditate first. And they'll look at you strange, but they're new. They don't know. And you meditate with them for 3 minutes before you start. And then you meditate with them 3 minutes afterwards. It's incredible the difference that the conversation has. Now, the next step is that every time they call you, you meditate with them for 3 minutes before you go down the road with whatever the problem du jour is. And it'll be amazing. Now, you can look at me and just go, look, you're some lame from Sedona. What the hell are you talking about? But each and every one of you have that one special person in your sobriety that when you see them on the phone, you just go, maybe I can just eat the phone, then I don't have to answer it. So, and you've had all those conversations with them, given them your very best stuff, and they still call you, right? And so, meditate with them for 3 minutes. Just try it. Try it a few times. See what happens. This is an experiment now. This is one of those stupid God tricks. And how do you find out whether the experiment is successful or not? See what the tone of the conversation is when you talk to these folks. It's incredibly different. Now, tomorrow I'll show you how we incorporate it in our home in our primary relationship. And if you don't we'll do that tomorrow, but... But this is a way to Do you know why these are called smartphones? Because I can't use it. Okay, let's see. Okay. So they come with timers on them. Now, when I was busy going along the spiritual path, you know, a year sober, I read about a guy that gave 1 minute every hour to God. And this guy was he was in religious school and like he just said, I'm going to give 1 hour a day or an hour, 1 minute an hour to prayer. And this guy ended up founding like 1,000 orphanages in China in 1920. Just from being that 1 minute. So I set the phone for 59 minutes. And every time it goes off, you know, you may have to put it on vibrate or, you know. But what happens is that when the phone goes off, I meditate for a minute. You think that won't change your workplace? And you can be sitting there, you know, across from a customer, and you feel the vibrator go off. You try not to give them the special smile. And you just raise up an awareness. They don't know. They don't know that what you're doing is actually being conscious. One of the guys that I've sponsored for a very long time, when I talked to him about meditating, and he finally went out into his garage in the morning to get away from the hair dryers because he had four daughters and a wife, you know, and he just, so he, you know, made a little ashram in his garage so he could meditate properly. And he got out there, and all he could hear was the birds. He called me up and said, meditation doesn't work, all I hear is birds. I said, Jimmy, when's the last time that you heard a bird sing? And so you're sitting there across from somebody and you just come up in your awareness and start to open up. They can't see it. You're walking into the fourth dimension. And just as you become aware, and then you come back to whatever it is that we're doing, you haven't actually left. But see what happens. When I did that, the first time I did it, you know, I went on a run about 3 months with it. We had those stupid little beeper watches back in the 1980. And I couldn't use that very easy. Very long either. But it fundamentally changed my consciousness. Again, this is just one of these things that if you try it, what happens? I become more aware. I become more present. I'm able to be of service more in my life, and I'm more effective in working with others. How do I know? Because they show up. And they try it, and they give the report. Now, the great thing about the fellowships is that we're not all insane on the same day. And if I've made the commitment to meditate with my sponsees, then no matter how busy I think I am, I'm going to be able to meditate 2, 3, 5 times a day, depending on who's calling, when, and how. So again, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Another stupid God trick. That's why they're called smartphones. And, you know, you can change the... Anyway... So one of the other things that I really want to do, and I know it's late. Cool. I thought I was going to go till 9:30. It's 9:30. So tomorrow, I'm sober so long it's intellectually indefensible. You still go to meetings? Oh, please. But I got a lot of experience, and so one of the things I want to do is that tomorrow we'll do a couple question and answer things. So tomorrow, if you've got a question, write it down, or we'll ask to get rolling after we meditate, you know, if you got any questions or anything, because I'm really happy to share my experience, strength, and hope. I have no reason why it is I'm here. I have no understanding of who the conversation is that I'm supposed to have or what it is that I'm supposed to say. It may be that it's just looking in the eye of one person when I'm walking down the street while I'm here. I don't have any idea. But I'm here to serve. And I'm here to have fun. Now, you know, I talked about telling everybody, you know, pray and meditate the way you drank and use, just try shit and see where you end up. Now, you'll meet folks along the way that will say that to you that Alcoholics Anonymous is a lower form of spiritual understanding.
Well, you're not really being spiritual. You're just hanging out in a cult.
Right. Let's see. They don't take all their money. There's no central authority figure. They tell me to believe whatever the hell I want. A cult? Please. They have a language, you know, and I haven't been to jail in a whole 3 months. Oh, I should just walk away from it, right. But anyway, the thing is that here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do what every spiritual master ever suggested. We feed the hungry. We go to the jails. We go to the hospitals. But what we really do here is we raise the dead. You want something entertaining? You want a purpose? I drank away my soul. I was an animal. And yet I came in contact with a man who got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came from the third dimension into the fourth. And you have that ability. As our first speaker said, everybody should sponsor.
Well, I'm not good at it.
You know groups where there are lots of people who don't want good sponsors. Go sponsor them. It's true. And in that time, you know, you have the ability to actually be there. I think the holiest place in the world is when there's the appearance of a life being brought in. And the second holiest is when they appear to leave, when somebody's going on. But the third holiest place is sitting at a kitchen table, turning pages, listening to a woman or man share honestly, and to see the light come on in their eyes. It is not us that does it. It's the message. It's not the messenger. But if you haven't had that privilege yet, it's the greatest thing in the world. Thank you.